In a new film from Focus on the Family and the Colson Center, Dr. Oz Guinness is on a quest to see if the West, including America, can get back to the ideas that helped give it birth and helped to see it flourish into the incredible civilization that we've seen. Oz travels to Rome and speculates if we're doomed to see our fall and decline as they did. This new film is called Truth Rising, and it's already garnered hundreds of thousands of views. Focus on the Family calls this documentary, quote, not simply a movie to watch, but a movement to join, end quote. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and Dr. Oz Guinness joins us right now. Dr. Oz, it's always a great privilege to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, mutually, Jerry. It's a delight.
So when you, in this film that you created, and you talk about the great ideas that helped the West, including America, to become, you know, what it did and to flourish so much, does Christianity have anything to do with that?
Of course. The West is a Christian civilization, but of course, the Christian faith rooted in Judaism. And there's no question that while we owe a lot to the Greeks and considerable amount to the Romans, in other words, classical civilization, the West is a Christian civilization.
So tell us about this film, Truth Rising. It must have been kind of in the years of making.
Long, actually, but there's two parts to the film. The first part, where are we? And then what do we do and how do we live faithfully? So my part is mainly in the first of those, and I was arguing, and the film shows it, that we're in what's called a civilizational moment. In other words, every civilization at a certain moment loses touch with the inspiration that made it. And when that happens, usually a lengthy period, there are only three broad choices. Renew the inspiration, replace the inspiration with something equally adequate, or else decline. Now, clearly, the Enlightenment, politically with secularism and liberalism, was the intended replacement, but they have failed. So you can see that we're now at the point where either there's a renewal of the Christian roots of Western civilization, or the West will join other great civilizations that have declined and fallen. And as you know, Jerry, where do you find the great civilizations of history? They're all either in ruins or museums or history books. That's our choice today.
Wow. And one of the things that you showed in the very opening of the film, you were showing these different temples and so forth. And I guess the main point was that these were once thriving civilizations, but now they're in ruins because they, like you say, they, in effect, they outgrew what it was that made them great in the first place.
That's right. Well, they lost touch with it. Obviously, we think above all of Rome because of Edward Gibbon's book, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. But what's wonderful for those of us who are Christians is that we don't follow the normal secular pairing, which is decline and fall. For us, the biblical pairing, both for Christians and for Jews, is not decline and fall, but it's exile and return. In other words, exile happens when people leave the way of the Lord. There are consequences, moral, social, national, and so on. Israel in captivity, the Western church often declining and becoming corrupt. But that doesn't mean automatically a fall. No, why? Because of the possibility of return. And from the great Jewish prophet Moses, right through to the end of the Old Testament prophets, Malachi and so on, you get the refrain, if you return to me, says the Lord, I will return to you and restore your fortunes. And you remember that great line by G.K. Chesterton, six times the church has gone to the dogs. But in each case, it was the dog that died. In other words, when we return to the Lord in the church, there's revival and reawakening. And so there's no need to say it's all over.
Okay. And you, when you look back at history and even Christian history, what do you see as some great examples of that? Like, for example, the decline, let's say, in England. You're ultimately from England, right? And you saw there was decline in England in the 1600s, 1700s, and yet there was also, at the same time, incredible renewal.
Well, in the English-speaking world, the two great awakenings, the first in the 18th century and the second in the 19th, had incredible social and national consequences. In England, they saved the country from what became the French Revolution. In America, they contributed the first awakening to the American Revolution. And in the second awakening in the 19th century, to many of the greatest reforms, supremely the abolition of slavery. So we know that the Lord can do it in power. In our own time, we've seen local revivals, like, say, at Asbury. But we need to pray, bringing the Lord our bankruptcy, and ask him to graciously speak in power through his word, break down in power through his spirit, so that we see a national revival, or even, we might say, a Western revival, or even wider.
You know, it's interesting, when the 20th century was unfolding after the Bolshevik Revolution and so forth, there were a lot of people, even from the West, who thought, okay, Russia, this is where the future is. And, you know, I think of, Malcolm Muggeridge. Okay, Malcolm Muggeridge, he got rid of all his bourgeois trappings. He travels over to the Soviet Union. This is the future and so forth. And he becomes totally disillusioned and eventually becomes a Christian and goes back to the West before he dies and so forth. But I find that a very interesting point. But there was a time when the communists were believed to be the future.
Oh, as Lincoln Stephens said, I've seen the future and it works, you know, when they look to the Soviet Union. But you look at the outcome. The end of the Marxist revolutions, their revolutions never succeed, their oppressions never end, and their promised futures never arrive. So the sooner America wakes up, in other words, we're coming next year to the 250th anniversary. Just as Lincoln said, quoting our Lord, a house divided cannot stand, half slave, half free. So in our time, leaders need to say to America, you can't be a house divided half 1776 and the American Revolution, which is rooted largely in the Bible, and then half 1789 and ideas coming down from the French Revolution. Americans have to choose.
Well, what are the main ideas from the French Revolution that we need to fight against?
Well, they had a different source. The American Revolution in the Bible, the French Revolution in the French Enlightenment. They had different views of humanity. The American Revolution was realistic, and that's why you have checks and balances, because sin and the abuse of power. The French Revolution, utopian. And you can trace the differences all the way down to the ways they tackle injustice. And you can spell them out. And Christians need to think of them very carefully and be able to argue in public why the biblical ideas give us a much higher and a much richer and deeper view of freedom.
Would you say that it's safe to say that with the founders of America, they, you know, although imperfect, they gave us equality, or they, we should strive for this goal, equality of opportunity. With the French Revolution, there was the goal of equality of outcome. And equality of outcome, how can a government impose that, you know, without cracking a few eggs? And they still won't succeed in that very goal, equality of outcome.
Well, I agree with you totally, Jerry, but those are 20th century ways of putting it, you know. But you listen to the Declaration of Independence. Walter Isaacson, in yesterday's press, called it the greatest sentence ever written by a human hand. Now, I wouldn't agree with that. I think John 3:16 is far more important. But having said that, the sentence he refers to, we hold these truths to be self-evident and so on, they are truly radical. But Ben Franklin put in those two words, self-evident. So the simple fact is they wouldn't have been self-evident to Plato and Aristotle. They wouldn't have been self-evident to Alexander the Great and Caesar. They wouldn't have been self-evident to Hindus. They were only self-evident to readers of the Bible. Because created in the image of God, there's a dignity of all human beings. Now, we have to work out what that means politically, because as you know well, there's a tension between liberty and equality. And if you put equality in the wrong place, it undermines liberty, as you were suggesting.
Comment on Abraham Lincoln, if you would, in terms of the Bible and his worldview. Some people like to say, well, he wasn't necessarily a churchgoer, although he did near the end of his life. He was getting ready to join the New York Avenue Presbyterian Church in D.C., but he was a reader of the Bible, and it had a strong impact on him and even his politics, correct?
Absolutely. And he'd been brought up on the King James Bible. And all the way through, you can see how it shapes his worldview. And increasingly, as he wrestles with the horror of the carnage of the Civil War, he sees it in terms of faith. And there's no question that in the White House, he has a very, very profound view of faith in his understanding of what was happening in the 19th century and above all in the Civil War. So he ends in a wonderful place.
And Lincoln said that if America were ever to die, it would be through suicide.
That's right. He says that as a 20-year-old in his famous speech to the Lyceum, you know, in Springfield, Illinois. And of course, he's right. As a nation of free men, he said, either we'll live free for all time or die by suicide. In other words, free people bring themselves down. And to me, as a foreign admirer of this country, you know, that's the tragedy of America today. Americans are squandering their freedom. It's not Russia bringing America down. It's not China bringing America down or Iran. It's Americans bringing America down. And that's the tragedy. Even many Christians can't give you a real solid understanding of the biblical ideas that were behind the revolution.
Okay, so with Truth Rising, what was the goal here? That to help people, Christians, to realize, you know, what we need to do to help change our culture and get back to this Christian influence on the culture?
Well, as I said, my part was more, where are we? The second half of the film, which was led by John Stonestreet, he tackles the question, what do we do? And it puts the spotlight on half a dozen people who with real courage are standing in their spheres. These are not great leaders. These are ordinary people. When the crisis hit them in their world, then they've made these creative and courageous stands. And that's what every believer needs to do today.
All right, we have less than a minute to go since the 250th anniversary of America is around the corner. What do you suggest we could do to kind of grease the skids to revival, if you will?
Well, I'm part of a little movement that wants on the National Day of Prayer next year, May the 7th, to have an event in Washington rather like the equivalent of Ezra and Nehemiah. That was calling the nation back. And at the heart of the event, I'm suggesting there should be a solemn thanksgiving, a solemn confession, and a solemn rededication to America's first principles. But of course, Americans have got to know what those first principles are.
Wow. And people can get more information at ozguinness.com. or also truthrising.com. We're basically out of time, but May 7, 2026, that's something to put on the calendar. Thank you, Oz. Appreciate it.
Great privilege to be with you. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, great. Thanks now. Bye-bye.